Hello, and oh my God, the Dodgers won the dang thing. The whole they dang did, thing.
They did it. Oh. 32 years in the making. Look, you could bring up like 1988 all you want now, and it doesn't have like the burden of all the weight of not winning since then. It's like, oh, cool, that was one of those other championships the Dodgers won. Now we could say the Dodgers are the current MLB World Champions. The 2020 in hindsight, pretty good year baseball wise. Everything else sucked, but like, yeah, weird. What
literally
a weird
as
year.
As soon as the season ended, it started sucking again. Yeah, we're gonna talk about everything. Favorite plays. Maybe like a little MVP ranking. It is literally 2 a.m. my time, so just about to come to weird
we're
baseball,
it.
Eric. To
yeah,
weird baseball for you.
We are winging it. As
so
say.
It's going to be off. We're haphazard. It's going to be great. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. Don't have a rewind. Don't have questions. We're just going to go for it. We'll do all of that after this. So we're going to get this out of the way because I want to talk about nothing but happy things. Let's talk about the Justin Turner thing before we talk about this amazing World Series and amazing playoff run. Really shortly after, the first segment or two on the post-game show, post-game show announced that Justin Turner had tested positive for COVID, which is why he was removed in the top of the eighth. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe the eighth was when he got taken out, or I think in maybe the end of the seventh.
And so that alone was frustrating because how are you getting a test result back in the middle of the eighth? Like, why are these players being allowed to take the field when they don't have the results from that test? Why aren't you doing rapid tests in addition to the more slower, more accurate tests? Just a lot of frustrating questions, but almost entirely on the shoulders of Major League Baseball and possibly the Dodgers. Don't know exactly how that arrangement works, but mostly on MLB. And then during the taking the pictures for the trophy, Justin comes out and is near people and takes his mask off and kisses his wife, all of which at a floor is bad optics. And at more realistic take, really, it's bad. It's dangerous. It's not good. There's blame. I'm going to play the blame game, except to say that. It's frustrating to see Justin do that. It's aggravating. It's really frustrating to see that there wasn't a good system in place, both to once you had a positive test in the middle of a game to keep a player isolated. It's frustrating that you're getting the results in the middle game, that just none of this seemed to be handled well at all by any of the parties at large. That's upsetting because it's put a damper on my enjoyment of the game afterwards. I know a lot of people on Twitter are feeling the same sentiments, so wanted to talk about that so we didn't like pepper it throughout. You have anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, so like there was a lot of confusion post game. Ken Rosenthal first reported on FS1, I believe, live, and then he put out a correction later. I think Jeff Passan, Bill Shaken also had this this sort of shows how the testing in itself is a weird system, and it's not foolproof, obviously, because the result on the test from Saturday, no, excuse me, they played Tuesday. The result from the test on Monday came back Tuesday in the second inning of the game. And then I guess that was inconclusive or like there was some question. So they ordered a retest. Earlier today, I guess, I'm sorry, the test results earlier were inconclusive. They came back in the second inning, and then they got later on the
Tuesday's
results of the second
test.
Yeah, and then that came back positive. That's so he's removed from the game. Protocol says he has to go into isolation. And at some point, you just realize, okay, the protocol is it in some ways like all for show. Like it was... For all the like talk MLB had, it was, yes, safety, health was involved, but it was clearly MLB shown this from day one, not the priority. The priority was finishing the season.
Yeah, they wanted to be able to say we're taking tests every day, but you're getting tests back,
yeah,
what, 30, you know, 24 to 36 hours after you take it. Like, it's unacceptable.
Everybody looks bad. everybody looks bad in this. The Dodgers, Andrew Friedman was interviewed about it. So the timing of the post-game Zooms, after all the on-field stuff, there wasn't a lot out yet. Like when we talked to Dave Roberts, so like it didn't even come up. Like, hey, why the hell was Justin Turner on the field, right? It was sort of trickling out yet still. So Mookie Betts was asked about it, and he was like, he's our teammate. Forget all that, you know, whatever. And like he was very flippant about it, which was disappointing. But like, whatever. You sort of understand that it's player mindset. That's what they want to do. And Andrew Friedman, though, was asked very pointedly about it several times and, you know, was pressed quite a bit and was, you know, so he acknowledged, yes, it's bad optics. And he's like, look, I haven't seen all the photos about, like, you hope they're wearing masks. There's photos of literally Andrew Friedman with Roberts and Turner in a group. When I first saw that, like, Justin Turner was going out on the field, like, to get a shot with the trophy, I'm like, that's actually kind of cool. I assumed in my head, because I was just like, I wasn't there. I thought that initially, like, he was going out by himself, you know, with his wife. And like, that's a cool moment, right? You get to celebrate on the field. Justin Turner's like one of the biggest parts of the franchise, obviously. And to get to celebrate that, but then it's like, oh, he's out there with everybody. Like they're just like out there, like out there. So the fact, and then Andrew Friedman's sort of response to this was like, he wanted to go out there and we weren't going to stop him. And it's like, well, why not? Have protocols? Or like someone from MLB like should have, and the team should not have let him. But we're not going to like harp on this. That's just sort of what it is.
We have the lead with it. It's sort of fitting for this year, right? 60 exactly. Season. So much was around COVID.
Nothing's normal, right? But like, yeah.
We didn't want to not acknowledge it, and we wanted to start with it because we didn't want to end with it. So
it's not to say like neener, like you guys are, you know, you got caught and you should be shamed for it. It's not that. It's a literal health risk of like potentially spreading. And then Andrew Friedman, the other thing he said was like everyone within like the contact tracing with Justin, they've already been around him. So they're like, we didn't, you know, whatever, like they, if you're going to get like, that was essentially the attitude. If you're going to get it, you're going to get it. So the consequence of this is the Dodgers might be in Texas longer than they expected, because they're probably going to have to quarantine. They're all getting like tested once they go back to the hotel, and they might, like, depending on how the testing goes, they might have to like stay there for a while. So it's like this weird, they're trapped in their own prison that they created, because it's very odd. Like I don't know how it should have been handled, but it seemed like they could have handled it a lot better than they did. But that, you know, that was just part of one part of like a very eventful night, as it were.
Eventful night, eventful few weeks. We wanted to make sure that we talked about that. It's going to be a story. It's going to be probably a bigger story in some circles than the game itself, which is a shame. And I wanted to acknowledge how it dampened my enthusiasm. But let's talk about the remarkable, given that story, the amount of enthusiasm I still have. That was awesome. Wasn't awesome? Game four. This comes up a lot. Do I watch the games? Do I not watch the games? I didn't watch game one because it was a Kershaw start and that was make anxious. I watched the back half of game two. They lost that one. I don't remember what I did with game three. Honestly, I think I waited till they had a lead and I started watching. I watched every pitch of game four.
Whoa.
I picked the wrong one to say the least. It was heartwarming checking Twitter after the game. Not heartwarming, but I don't know. I don't know the right word. It's too late for me to think of the right word. But seeing a lot of people on Twitter having the same feelings as me, Daniel Brim especially had like mentioned that he cried. I cried hard, just because it's so easy in a game like that, which is a game the Dodgers have lost so often, a similar game like that, to just become immediately fatalistic. Because sure, they could win the Kershaw game, and sure, they can win the Walker game, but they're not going to win, even if it's a Tony Gonsolin quote-unquote start, it's a bullpen game. They can't win a bullpen game, not against Ian Snell. Kevin Cash is too good of a manager, and Dave Roberts isn't a good manager. And then Dave Roberts pushes, like, he had to push so many buttons in this game and in Game 7 in the NLCS, both of which were bullpen games, and he just like makes every move correctly. Lies to us about Urias not appearing in this game.
Yeah. Filthy liar, Dave Roberts.
Which is, and I'm sure that was the plan, right? But once they got the lead and saw that was close, they're like, whatever. Right. Game 7, if that happens, you get Trinan, Kenley, etc. We're going to Urias today. Like, let's shut this door. And Urias came through.
Man, like, it was so good. So going back to game 4 for just a second, you're right. Like, that's a crushing loss, right?
Oh, my god.
Like, that game was insane, first
because
of all.
Because if you
like,
win that game, you win the World Series. You are not losing a Kershaw start or a Walker.
Oh, like, yeah, you're not
you're
losing
You're winning
both.
One of those.
Yeah. And like, that was
and
another
if you don't,
year.
You are, it's the most heartbreaking 3-1 loss ever.
Put it this way. So, Urias started game 4. He went 4 2/3 and allowed 2 runs. That was his worst outing by far this postseason. Like, that's how good he was all postseason. But the fact that he got taken out and then, like, you're talking about, like, Dave Roberts, he, like, pushed a lot of wrong buttons in that game, especially, like, you know, Pedro Baez, who's, like, always in front and center in every, like, you know, pivotal moment
he's
in
so
Dodgers postseason.
Unless he's in that. Yeah. And it's not even necessarily high leverage spots per se. It usually is, but just mm-hmm. like, cause he's succeeded in high leverage spots too, but it's all of these like, oh, it's going to be a game like this. Of course it's going to be Baez to do this.
Yeah. And then like the Kenley Jansen thing where he literally gave up like 2 bloop hits, one that he shattered a bat on, but he also missed his spot very badly in both
and the stuff
situations.
Was medium minus yeah. at best. Like, no, it was not.
Yeah. Literally the first double error walk-off in World Series history. Chris Taylor bobbled the ball. Will Smith dropped the ball at home plate after Randy Arozarena fell down.
And it wasn't a very good throw from Max Muncy. This is horrific play. I mean, everyone's seen it at this point.
So what I immediately thought of it was, well, it's like, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play? If you think back to 2017 World Series, obviously the cheating is the number one thing now, but like at the time, game 2 and game 5 were the crushers, right? They were the 2 like all-time games that World Series was going to get remembered for, and the Dodgers lost both of them, right? Mm-hmm. So like, and then if you look at it, so the game 2 was early enough in the series. It made it 1-1 instead of 2-0. So it wasn't as crushing, but like a later thing. So game 5, instead of going home up 3-2, they go home down 3-2. They still put themselves in position to win in game 7. They didn't, but like that's crushing. And then 2018, the Puig game where he hits the 3-run homer that should have been his iconic moment in Dodger history, and it becomes forgotten because everyone in the bullpen was terrible after. And so they blow that game. And keep in mind, Kenley Jansen got blown saves at all these games, except for one that he got the loss in. That put the Dodgers down 3-1, and like that series was over at that point. This one, even after all that, it was 2-2. It felt at the time like the Dodgers were losing the series 2-2 somehow. But like that was like the saving grace.
That's a really good way of putting it. Like losing 2-2, like. It felt like the Dodgers were down like 3-1. Like it just felt like the Rays had this imaginary lead. And it wasn't even necessarily that I was suddenly a believer in momentum. I didn't think, oh, they're going to come out pressing. Like I'm like, this team has shown like they are really, really good at pushing the reset button. That happened. And now you have to, the Kershaw's going to blow it. You know, either that or Dave will mismanage him. Joe Kelly will somehow make an appearance. Like you have to rely on a bullpen. Like the 3 games ahead of you are a Kershaw game. Maybe Gonsolin can go 6, but probably like a short leash. So a high chance of a Dave Roberts bullpen game. And then game 3, you have Walker and you have maybe Urias if he doesn't get used in game 6, but that maybe get you all 9 innings, but you might need another inning out of maybe a Kenley Jansen. Now you have to worry about Dave Roberts making the move there. And it just is so, again, I'm going to use the word fatalistic, to think of this pattern that is going to just result in the Dodgers' downfall.
I would, just judging from the comments, we get in the playoffs, in the playoffs, things get nuttier than normal, and like we get some new people, right? A line plus also people are on edge, right? They haven't won. The Dodgers hadn't won, and you're like, people after game four wanted like Dave Roberts' head on a pike, essentially. Yep. You know, like not everyone, obviously, but like that was a very strong sentiment.
And we'll talk about this at a later episode because until today, and then maybe in NLCS game seven, you might be able to argue, the bullpen in general needs to be talked about. This has been a running pattern for a while where specifically in the playoffs, just things don't sit right. You bring 15 relievers, but you seem to trust 2.5. And so you overuse those guys and you're never using the other. Like, there's just a lot of things that are just off. So Dave Roberts deserves some flack.
Yeah.
It's a collaborative process with the front office. And it starts with what pitchers you're bringing in. If you don't trust these guys to get out, why are they on the roster to begin with? So I don't know where that is. We'll talk about it later. But oh man, what were we talking about?
Oh no. So just to go off on that a little bit. So Jake McGee
had the
highest strikeout rate on the staff all year. It was like 40%. And he was barely used to the point where he was one of the pregame Zoom people the other day. I can't remember which game it was, maybe game five. And I had my hand up to ask a question, but Ken Gernick, being the good beat writer that he is, he was called on before me, and his question was like, it was a very nice way that he put it, but it was like, are you hurt? Like, you know, like basically like, why haven't you been used? It was essentially that's how sort of I was going to ask it too. And he's like, no, I've been fine. It's like, he's like, look, it was matchups. Like a lot of the time, like he didn't pitch until the NLCS. Like they didn't like the matchups against the Padres, which they only had a couple lefties. So that made a little more sense. Although he had reverse splits, but whatever, like it was just weird how he wasn't used. And then, and like also weird how like Joe Kelly also wasn't used, like in a,
what's really weird is he had one of the highest leverage spots in all of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that was it. Yeah. And you know, he appeared in game two, in the World Series, and then a couple other times in the NLCS. But still, it was like, here is this super high, come save this really disparate situation, and we're done with you.
Yeah, and it just so like, but yeah, so the like Victor Gonzalez like covered himself in glory, like pretty much. What a surprise rookie season from him. Even within the season, he just kept improving.
And he did in the playoffs too, right?
No, like, he relied on him.
Like, fine, but he had little blemishes, and then today just strikes out the side like just confidently
and was amazing. Dylan Floro also like very effective all year and against righties and lefties, and then was left off one of the early rosters, and I think that was the wild card, and then he got added back. But it's like, it's just weird, like but then he got like probably the biggest out of
it's really interesting because this was the thing that got started talking about, sorry to interrupt you, between games four and five was this was a thought. I know baseball pretty well, but I'm by no means like this deep diver, either analytics or certainly not mechanics guy. But the sort of the book seemed to be on Randy was mashes lefties, so you want a righty, but he mashes fastballs, so you want a righty that has some pitches with movement. And Dodgers don't really have anyone that lined up well against him except for Floro. But clearly they were a little nervous to use him really with any other hitter, but he got the call in this game to do the one batter, but boy, he made it count.
Yeah, Randy Arozarena was the guy for the Rays, right? Like all postseason, he hit 10 home runs. Like he was so good, and it was like he was just prevalent like all the time. And so here's how I sort of viewed this series, right? The Braves series was like a mini miracle that the Dodgers got through that. They were down 3-1 to an excellent team
with
such a good offense. Like, and it was. That was a slog to get through, right? And it was 7 games in 7 days. So I think I was texting you before the Rays. I was like looking at the Rays offense. I'm like, this offense is, I mean, look, they're not bad, but this offense is bad, like relatively, right? And so like, that's a huge mismatch. But But Randy and Rosarena like kept them afloat, man. They also had Brandon Lau was really good during the regular season. He started to hit in the World Series. He had 3 home runs.
And then they have a sort of platoon thing. They're going with Choi and a few others. Like so,
and a lot like Yandy Diaz was a factor. Like he played against lefties, and like, they have guys, right? Like they're not bad. It's just, but they don't have like that. Man, you know where you're going. Oh, it's got to go 1 through 9 on this team. Like a lot, there was a lot of outs,
which the Dodgers have and the Braves have, right? Like, yeah. Like the Braves, like whenever they turn the lineup over, I'm like, oh god. Acuña, Azuña, Freeman. Like you have to get those through those threes, and then even the back half is just nonstop home run hitters. So
So I want to say another thing. So speaking of the NLCS. That sort of informed how the Dodgers went into this series, and it informed like how they went into game 6 in a way. So to win against the Braves in game 7, it was, you know, winner take all, do or die. The Dodgers ended up using their other 3 starting pitchers, the non-Kershaw Bueller types, Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, and both were sort of ineffective in that game. Like they didn't pitch very well. Didn't go very long, but then Urias closed it out with 3 innings at the end. So they used their 3 other starters. They had Kershaw for game 1 of the World Series. Now, game 2, it's either bring Walker Buehler back on short rest, which he's never done, and he's dealing with blisters on his right hand, so that was not a real consideration. So he's game 3. So you have to fill game 2 somehow. And all you can do at that point is essentially a bullpen game, right? They started Tony Gonsolin, but reasonable people knew that game was not a real start, right? That was literally everyone is on 2 days rest. They ended up not using Urias because they were holding him for game 4. Thank God, because that would have been a disaster if they had done that. But so they used Gonsolin again and took him out shortly. They had a quick hook on him, which is fine. And then Dustin May was just bad. And so both of them, we didn't know at the time, but Dave Roberts said, or I guess Gonsolin said, Roberts told him after game 2, he's starting game 6, which was finally his like actual chance to be a regular routine starter. He was supposed to start game 4 against the Padres, but the Dodgers swept them, so he didn't get that. So by the time he started the NLCS, which a start was moved up 2 days because of Kershaw's back, Gonsolin had not pitched in 17 days. So like his whole like routine was messed up. Like obviously he still have to make pitches and but he just struggled. Right. And so, so he gets to start tonight. It's sort of a regular thing. They're just going to let him go as long as he can. And then he gives up a home run to Rosarena, which I saw a thing. I think Jay Jaffe tweeted this. That was the only, Rosarena hit. Like, I think he hit 17 total home runs. Cause he came up, he had like COVID earlier in the year, I believe. And but he came up in September and he hit 7 home runs in September. Then he hit 10 home runs in the playoffs. So of the 17 home runs, that was the only one that was a pitch out of the strike zone. So not a bad pitch. Rosarena's just locked in. He's just crazy. So, but then he also gave up like 2 other hits, 2 other walks, and then he was in the second when he walked a guy with 2 outs. That was they had G-Man Choi leading off today. So Rosarena's up again, and they're like, "You're not facing Rosarena again." Like, and like that's not necessarily on Gonsolin, right? He was not bad. It was just like, but also that's just a quick hook. I saw people complaining on Twitter, and I don't like to be I'm not setting up a straw man or anything like that. I'm just saying like, people are like, they said they weren't going to do an opener. That's not an opener. That's just a manager reacting to the game. everyone confuses this whole thing. Like they're doing the analytics and scripting. No, this is a manager reacting to how his pitcher's pitching, and like that was perfect. And so, but then, like you said, that set in motion a series of events where.
The leading bullpen ERA to look like it for once in the playoffs. Like,
exactly.
They were so good.
and we talked about, like, Flora was the guy they brought in there to get the last out of the second with a man on first, and the Rays were up 1-0. And then another thing about Dylan Flora, part of his resurgence this year was he developed his changeup a little better, but he only, that was a pitch against the lefties. and Arozarena is a righty, and he threw him three straight changeup and struck him out. Like, it was like, whoa, all right, cool. Like, he only threw that pitch like 6.5% of the time against righties this year. And so that was a surprise, and it worked. And then Alex Wood came in. He was great this postseason. Like, a lot of it was – some of it was mop up early. He was getting, like, increasingly higher leverage roles. And, like, he was very good. He was so good to the point tonight where he retired all six batters he faced, struck out three on 20 pitches, that everyone was like, why are you taking out Alex Wood right now? And so, like, kudos to him. Like, this postseason was so long. We had all these pitchers, like Kenley Jansen early in the postseason, were like, put him on ice, don't ever use him again. Like, and then, like, within like a week, it was like, we're, oh, like, my, no, God,
Kenley's the best. Like, and yeah, then after game four, like, never use Kenley again.
Right. This is such a roller coaster. They played 18 games, man. They were 13-5, and you would think it was like 9-9, given how October takes years off your life. But yeah, so, but then, and again, Pedro Baez was the one brought in there, and he was fine. And his, like, he retired two guys, gave up a hit, and then that's when Victor Gonzalez came in, I think. And then, yeah, and, like, they just, and then Urias again, like, so, okay, just a note on Urias, right? So, closed out the NLCS with 9-up, 9-down in game 7. Today he was brought in the 7th inning with 2 outs, and he got the final 7 outs, did not give up a base runner. He had a 1.17 ERA in 23 innings with 29 strikeouts and 4 walks. He had 2 starts in the postseason. He had 1 bulk relief slash start type thing. He had another 3 innings scoreless. He was the one guy who was, like, you know, utilizing all these other roles, and just did great. We talked about this so many times in the previous years. Like, when are they going to take the gloves off Urias? Obviously, this was only a 60 game season, so that contributed to it. But, man, just letting him go out there and show what he can do. Like, what a year for him, and what a playoffs! It was remarkable, really.
So I kind of want to talk about the World Series in general, the playoffs in general.
We haven't even talked Kershaw yet.
Oh, there's so yeah, much. I know, I'm making weird notes we're going to have to go through. Yeah. I have an idea of how we'll get there. We'll do a little commercial thing, and then we'll be back after this. Just for the sake of having a framing device to talk about all these random things, we're going to miss some, right? There's some players, some play we're not going to talk about, because, again, now 2:30 or something my time. But we're going to try. So let's, real quick, let's do like a top 5-ish MVP. Let's do of the World Series. How about that?
Okay, sure. Do you want to go first?
I'll get the easy one. Corey Seager. Okay.
Well, you picked the winner. Yeah.
There's 2 bets that you and I made that I want to talk about. I said Corey Seager would be the next Dodger to win an MVP, and look at me.
Oh, wow. Nice. Look, I'll give it to you on the technicality, because he was so good.
Oh, like, good.
So I think I have his it's hard to get the
I'm Googling.
No, I'll get it. So his he hit 400. He was 8-for-20 in the World Series. And, like, just so good. So his overall postseason, he was so good. But, like, okay, so we talked about Randy Arozarena having the 10 home runs. That was that he set a record. No, but Seager had 8, and, like, that's the second most ever, tied with a bunch of people. So Seager for the playoffs, the whole playoffs, hit 328, 425, 746. He drove in 20 runs. The only person to drive in more was David Freese in 2011 when he was out of his mind. Superman. He drove in 21, yeah. And then he scored 20 runs, and that was, I believe, one behind the postseason record. So, like, just all over it, man. Like, just so good, and, like, just all postseason, really. Now I thought, you know, had Seager, like, he was like 8-for-17 coming into tonight, and he was 0-for-3, but he drove in the go ahead run with a ground out, thanks to Mookie Betts' stellar base running again.
Fielder's choice, right?
Yes, but it counts as a ground out. But, okay. So, okay, let me tell you, this is fun. Like, so I went for the first time all year. I did not watch the game from my apartment. I visited my cousin. We were in his driveway, distanced well enough, and I was wearing a mask, and he has a TV in his garage, so we were watching that. But we were using the Fox Sports app on Roku,
which is
which is roughly 3 innings behind live television.
It's a good solid minute.
It was like I think it was like 3 to 4 pitches.
That sounds about right. Yeah,
and like that is brutal.
Ooh, it is awful.
So and meanwhile, I'm trying to like write stuff and like be sort of semi online. Like I was obviously we were talking and stuff. And I was visiting with him, but once the nitty gritty started, like I had to like be online, right? Like to sort of finish stuff. And it's brutal because like I knew the Dodgers won thanks to Twitter before they actually won or before I saw it, you know, and that's no way to live, man. It was tough. But, God, I don't know why I even brought this up. Oh yeah. So when I saw that, okay, in the rally of so the Dodgers were down 1-0. Blake Snell was even better than he was in game two. I'm trying to think here. So Blake Snell had struck out 9 batters in the first 4 innings. Now he's in the 6th inning. He gives up a single to Austin Barnes, who, by the way, caught 4 of the 6 games in this series. They really relied on him there. Will Smith was the DH all those times. But Barnes gets on. There's 1 out in the 6th. Blake Snell is at 73 pitches. Again, with 9 strikeouts, he's given up 2 singles, nothing else all night. And Kevin Cash pulls him. Doesn't let him go the 3rd time through the order. And like I literally after the game, Dave Roberts said, you know, they don't want to let – they're not clowning Kevin Cash, right? But they're just like, yeah, that was great. He's like,
Cody Bellinger's reaction when asked about it?
Oh yes, on FS1, he was grin. He was the one who went in on it. But so Dave Roberts after the game in the like the interview stuff, he said like Mookie Betts like looked over to the dugout and kind of smirked, right? Or like, and then so Betts hits a double to make it 2nd and 3rd, and then they score the tying run on a wild pitch, the perfect Dodger rally of other years. But and then I see on Twitter, I think I saw ground ball 2-1 Dodgers, and in my head I'm thinking, okay, Corey Seager grounded out, so that's fine. When I see the play, I'm like, it was like one of those like hidden gems, like you know, because it was just a ground ball to first and they threw home immediately to try to get Betts, so and they didn't get him, but Seager didn't make an out, so I was like, oh, so that's a hidden fun little prize. And it's like that was the only time all night that I was like, you know, given something like that was a surprise to me when I saw it. So it was just a weird way to watch.
It's really like, I don't want to go on to like any Tampa Bay communities and talk, you know, say, go good game. Never good for the winner to do that. But if there are Tampa Bay fans listening, we know this pain, maybe not this exactly, but Dodger fans, this is like, We know what this is like, right? This is maybe not Kershaw, because Dave's problem with Kershaw is the opposite. But this is like maybe taking a dealing Urias out, or Rich Hill, if you wanted to be a truther about that, in 2017, and putting Kenley in. Because they put Nick Anderson in, who had given up, I think, a run in the last 40 games.
Right. Yeah,
but still.
I forgot if we said this. I think this was a pregame thing, or pre-series thing, our last podcast. Where like we were saying like how much better he was in the regular season.
Yeah.
And then I said I was like joking, or not joking, but I was like, has he given up more runs in the postseason? And he's like, you're like, yeah, he gave up 1 run in the it was 2 runs but 1 earned. But like, yeah, he literally gave up now. Yeah. Oh God. So he gave up a run in his last 7 outings.
7, yeah.
Of the playoffs. And like, to be fair, like a couple of those were 2+. And they were all like substantial, but like still, that's no way to live if you're a reliever. Like that's rough. But I don't know. It was like, it was fortunate, right? Like, yep. But it's 2-1 like the whole game, and then when Dave Roberts is doing all these like moves, and then so like it was never more than a 1-run game until the 8th when Mookie Betts hit the insurance run home run, and so it's my turn to pick an MVP. So if in my head after game 5. I was thinking Kershaw was going to win MVP, and actually, until I noticed that Corey Seager was 8-for-17, then I was like, "Well, at most, it's like a split for Kershaw." And then, but Kershaw like was great, right? Like,
and this got talked about a lot. I'm really glad a lot of Dodger fans cued into this, like the two Kershaw starts, right? Like these are the Kershaws we see about every other game almost all the time in the regular season. Maybe with one really bad game. You get the stuff is good, which usually means the slider is on and there's a good differential between the fastball and the slider and it's breaking really nicely the way he wants. And he is just flabbergastingly on and disgusting and amazing. We got that in game 1. But what makes Clayton so special and so endearing is when he doesn't have that, he tends to just still find a way to strikeout numbers won't be that impressive. Maybe he walks a few guys because he's kind of trying to nibble maybe a little bit more than if he had the slider going. But he still gets through and gets you gutty 6 to 7 innings. And we got both those starts in this World Series.
Yeah, you're right exactly on that. So in that game 1 start, you're right, he had the slider working. The first inning, not so much, but he found it quick. Yep. And like I saw the stat there was in game 1, he 38 swings on his pitches and 19 misses, like a 50% whiff rate, which is ridiculous. And then in game 5, he had 41 swings and 11 misses. So like you said, was fighting, right? Like he was fighting the whole game. But like managed weight, and he got into this situation in the, man, was that the 5th? No, that was the 4th. When he walked the first two guys, which is uncharacteristic for him. And then, but before the second walk, Manuel Margot stole second, and then a bad throw got him to third. So the walk put runners on the corners. And then Kershaw got the two quick outs out of that. It's 3-2 at this point. The Dodgers are leading. And with that situation, you're thinking this game is at least tied, right? Like with nobody out, first and third. That's probably going to be a run. And then immediately almost there's two outs. And then Manuel Margot decides to try to steal home. And that, and like this is,
I'm watching on game day, right? I'm checking the score or I see a tweet like he stole home. I'm like, oh, it was part of a double steal. Nope. Just a straight steal.
Yeah. And it was like, and it almost worked. Like,
yeah, yeah.
He was out, right? Like clearly out by replay and stuff. But like, if you just have a really like a bad throw home, like you could see how it might work. Right. So like,
I don't think he should necessarily, like, I think the fault is, who was up? Kiermaier? Is that right?
Yes. Kevin Kiermaier.
He's been pretty dang good hitted for the Rays. And at that point, maybe you don't want to squander the opportunity, but in pure isolation, it wasn't that awful of an idea because of how close it was. So, unlike say maybe the ending of game 4 or the base running gaffe of the Braves in game 7, this should not necessarily, I don't think, be viewed as like, oh, Murgo screwed up or a toot bland or anything like this. Cause not only was it super, super close, Kershaw was perfect. And a lot has been talked about this. He gets his foot off the rubber, so it's not a balk. So if the batter does swing thinking it's the pitch, he's out on interference and just throws a strike to Barnes. And a little spoiler on who I might be talking about soon on this list, applies a perfect tag, cradles the ball to the runner's leading tag hand. Just perfect application of that tag.
To be fair, you could say that Kershaw's throw was a little high.
That's
high
fair.
Inside it, but not still, a
perfect strike. But in that presence of mind,
he got it there. Yeah,
and
right.
Kudos to Max Muncy for drawing Kershaw's attention to the play.
Yeah, because Kershaw's back is the third of that, and so. But yeah, Kershaw like cool as a cucumber, basically like stepping off, throwing home. It was perfect. And then like he got a very quick 5th, and then the plan going into the 6th was. He's going to face two batters, and then they're going to bring in God, I actually forgot who they brought in. Was it Gradrol then? Yeah, it must have been Gradrol. I honestly, I don't remember. But he got those two batters on two pitches, and they're like, so it led to this funny moment where they go to the mound visit, right? And like they know what the plan is, but then like Kershaw's like, you know, are we doing this or whatever? And then Justin Turner's there, and I will clean this up a bit, but he said he can get this MF-er, right? And like that was pretty clear by his lips that he was saying that, and then they still pulled Kershaw. And the Dodger partisan crowd at Globe Life Field, they had a lot of Dodger crowds in this series. It wasn't so much in the Atlanta series. It was pretty mixed and or Braves tilted, I think. But in the World Series, it was a lot of Dodger fans, like, you know, maybe 70%, something like that. And Dave Roberts got booed mightily for pulling Kershaw there. But again, it worked. It was one of those classic things where the pitchers do well and the manager looks good. So, like, yeah, exactly. So that Kershaw's my pick. Just to give his numbers for the series, 2.31 ERA, two wins. The first postseason series, he actually won two games in. There's been other series where the Dodgers won two of his starts, but he never that he got the win in two games in a series, which is bizarre. But like, good for him. He had a great postseason. He had a 2.93 ERA. He was 4-1. I think only like four walks or something and 30 something strikeouts. So he was excellent. Also he's the all time postseason strikeout leader. Now he passed Justin Verlander during game five.
So move on. My next player.
Go do it.
This is emotional and not actually like should be, you know, probably similar to Kershaw, but I want to talk about Austin Barnes.
Yep. Now, and I will say this, Austin Barnes was 2-for-13 in the series.
Yep.
And I completely agree with you.
And this was a before the playoffs started question. I think somehow it was phrased, would Austin Barnes get a start? I was a little bullish. You weren't. I texted you after game five, I think, saying I think Barnes should get the start game six.
I wasn't sure if it was. I thought he would start the Bueller game.
I think that. I was pretty confident in that, but was it in addition to that, should he start a game six? And it's so hard, right? It's so hard to say, so easy to say Will Smith, you know, worst pitch caller. There we go.
I thought we weren't going explicit on this.
Than Barnes, but you know that's such a small sample size. Barnes is also getting to catch Bueller and Kershaw, so that's going to inflate those numbers. But man, so specifically the fastball Baez threw to Lau that hit the 3-run home run. Yes, that's somewhat on the pitcher, but the catcher needs to not let the I think there was something that like he maybe called the changeup and Baez shook him off. You go up and say no. It is your job to say we're throwing the changeup here. And when the home run got hit, Dave Roberts had this look of not just like oh, man, what a bad result. He seemed upset that something occurred, and I don't know, but I wonder if it is why did they just throw the fastball, and he is. Pitch framing was excellent this whole series of this whole playoffs. His pitch calling was excellent this whole, like, it's hard. Again, you don't want to read too much in the catcher ERA because that's the pitcher's job for the most part. But it was dramatically different in the playoffs. And he just played great defense. Just did so many small things outside of hitting well and had a home run to boot.
Generally fine with Smith as a catcher. Barnes, elite. His framing is elite. And I think that's what they leaned on in a lot of this, given some of the strike zones during like the postseason. I think that was a big part of it. I don't think it was because Will Smith dropped the throw at the end of game four. Like that wasn't I don't think that's why.
No.
But maybe
a slight data point in the Austin Barnes is a better defensive catcher. And here is an episode of it, but you did this one thing bad. They're like, that's not how they've rolled ever. Otherwise we would have seen Chris Taylor benched and we definitely didn't see that.
Exactly. Because, yeah. And so on the Will Smith, Pedro Baez thing, he did say he called change up and Baez shook to a fastball. It was his second straight fastball at that point. And Smith, I believe I believe what he was doing was covering for his pitcher at this point, but he said he had conviction in the fastball, and that's why I let him throw it, essentially. Because mm-hmm. you don't want to, like, you want to have the pitcher, like, this makes sense, you know, intuitively a little bit. You want to have the pitcher, like, be confident in what he's throwing, and he was convinced that Pedro Baez was confident in the fastball. It obviously didn't work. Pedro Baez's fastball has been down this year velocity wise, and it wasn't his changeup is his best pitch, but I get it. You can't throw it every single pitch, but yeah, so that was rough. But yeah, I think he was covering for him a little bit there. You're right. He probably should have been more forceful and, like, throw me a damn changeup right here instead of that. So,
you have any other people you want to talk about in the MVP race?
Okay. So this is for the World Series.
If you want to expand a little bit, feel free. I just picked Austin Barnes, so feel free to.
Okay, so post game judgment aside, I'm going with Justin Turner.
Yeah,
who really turned it on late. He wasn't bad like early in the postseason, but he really got better as the postseason wore on. In the World Series, he was 320. 346, 720 with four doubles and two home runs. And then, like, if you go to his entire postseason, like I wrote about this, he basically took over, like, all the records, the Dodgers records this postseason, like the ones he didn't have before. Like, he passed home runs, runs, hits. I believe he had walks, but amazingly Max Muncy passed him because Muncy walked, like, every time up. So Justin Turner this postseason ended up with an 804 OPS, which is, like, it, again, not bad, but he's, like, constant. Like, that's his second worst playoff OPS with the Dodgers. Like, that's how good he's been in the postseason. But it was even better the last however many games. So he had a stretch from game four of the NLCS through game four of the World Series. Now, that was an eight-game stretch where he had all of his extra base hits. It was six doubles and three home runs. And, like, man, he had four hits in game four, the game they lost. But, like, he was just on it and, like, looking really good. So what a playoffs. What a – like, he's been the constant, right? They were the one guy they could always count on, like, in October in previous years, and he's been here. This is his – seventh season with the Dodgers. Like, he's going to go down in Dodgers history as, like, one of their best players. And, like, it's remarkable to even think about that.
So a few other names we definitely should talk about. They interviewed Walker Buehler, and you could tell, kind of tell there was this, sort of like, well, you almost got to be the guy. You probably would have been the guy. And maybe you're literally winning the MVP, but, like, him and Urias, man, like, I believe clutch aspects are slightly overrated. There's so much other things that go into it, but it is hard to deny those two guys just becoming nails when the moment needs.
Man, like, he was so good, Buehler. Like, beginning of the postseason, limited more by the blister to where he was only going four innings, and then, like, they were bringing in, like, Urias and May after for, like, a bulk. But, like, was really good as he was pitching, and then he just, like, gradually getting longer. He walked a lot of guys early on, and then he just stopped walking people, and he was just really, really great. It was, like, 25 innings, 180 ERA, 39 strikeouts. Like, great. Just fantastic. Like, what a series. What a playoffs for him.
Let's talk about Mookie.
I was just going to say, if he didn't come up, then you had to bring him up. So a lot of this, you know, I don't like to fall into this trap because it's an easy trap to fall into. Well, if you see a guy every day, it's hard to appreciate him unless you see him every day. You know, all this, like, ancillary, like,
and
you
it's
know.
So, you know, we've said it a bunch, but this was a thing that Red Sox fans said we would say. Like, you know he's good, but you will think, you will realize how good he is after you start watching him. And I can't think of a player of in my Dodger Watcher experience of how true that is.
Right. And like we talked about this before, like he actually had a couple defensive misplays in the postseason, including a couple, but like, you know, they were, you know, everyone has those, right? But that it was so remarkable because for most of the season, it's like you almost every play to right field, it's like he's always there in perfect position, making the catch in stride. Like he's never the guy who like dives into your frame late. If you're watching on TV, you know, to like catch a ball, he's always like there just waiting to catch it or whatever. But like, so I just want to say like his offense was fine during the postseason, right? Like it was at time, like, so heading into the World Series, he was 311, 407, 444. That's actually really good, obviously. But like, he had no home runs, but it's fine. He doesn't have to have home runs. Six doubles at that point. But like, he also had three games in a row in the Dodgers comeback in the NLCS where he had a ridiculous catch in right field. One robbed a home run. The other two like robbed doubles. No, one robbed a double. The other one was the shoe top catch that he ended up getting an assist on because he was stood upright enough to throw home. He had another great catch in the World Series. He also hit a home run in game one. He hit a home run in game six, the clincher. So those were his two home runs of the postseason. He stole two bases in two different World Series games. He was 8 for 8 in steals in the postseason. Excellent defense. For the postseason with the Dodgers, he ended up hitting 296, 378, 493, which is like, I think that's roughly his career line, you know, maybe or close to it. Like, and
little things on the base paths, getting the home on the fielder's choice today.
Yeah. Like he scored 15 runs in 18 games. So like extrapolate that out. That's a 135 run season. So like excellent. Just what an excellent player.
Again, we're missing names. We talked about Urias a little bit when we talked already about Walker, but I Max Muncy, starting with the NLDS, had his on-base percentage lower in each series. What a scumbag. Ended his World Series on-base percentage 444. It's just unreal.
That seems low. Well, and then also, I don't know if you saw this. I don't remember if it was Getty or USA Today, but a couple people tweeted it. But he hit the home run in Game 5. The last two games, it's funny. Like the Dodgers averaged, so they played 16 games at Globe Life Field. They averaged 5.8 runs in those games. So like. It was 6 before today, but the last two games were 4-2 and 3-1. So like, obviously pitching did its job, but like there was little key moments where Muncy hit the home run. And there was this great photo because he crushed that home run in game 5. And it wasn't second deck, but it was like so deep that you knew it was gone. And like he dropped the bat and like admired it first, but then there's a shot where Zunino behind the plate, Max Muncy just out the still photo is literally just standing at home plate, like looking out to like admiring the home run. And then Zunino's behind him doing the same thing. Like, oh my God. Right. Like thinking that, look how far that ball went. It's a great photo. Absolutely wonderful photo. So yeah, it was really good.
All right. I'm getting tired, but I do want to do one more segment. Let's each pick three favorite plays. Let's do from the postseason. And I'm not
plays.
just okay. Shoot from the hip. This doesn't need to be exhaustive. We're going to miss some incredible play, I'm sure. Please understand we're doing this as best we can. But let's just each pick three. You start.
I'm gonna go first with my first play is the Cody Bellinger catch of Fernando Tatis. Yeah. So that was in God. That was game two of the.
Yeah,
game
that sounds
two.
Right.
Yeah.
NLDS.
NLDS. And like, so it's 4-3 Dodgers in the seventh. that's a two-run home run that would have put the Padres ahead, but no.
And it just made one of those plays that made, that was like, I think the first play that made me go, oh, maybe this year's different. Like, that just, it just felt so special and so, oh yeah, that's a home run that, that's a, the pain of that home run is an experience that I've had before, and it didn't happen. The good thing happened.
Everything about that was great, like just from the play itself. But the fact that like Bruiser Gratterall like went absolutely nuts and with the, one of the greatest celebrations ever for like someone who almost gave up a home run. Now, again, it was in a joyous celebration towards his own dugout celebrating, and he like threw his hat through his glove. And then the Padres took offense, namely Manny Machado, and that sort of set off set. But that was like a harmless little thing, right? It, but it was hilarious, and I loved it. So that's my first pick.
I'm going to go moving to the next series, I guess. Will Smith versus Will Smith.
Mm.
The start of how – it's interesting. You and I tend to be fairly on the same keel on how optimistic or pessimistic we are with the Dodgers. We have a mix of both. I think we both do. Not true in this World Series. I was Captain Pessimism throughout our text messages, and you were whatever the opposite is, near to the point of delusion. Granted, you ended up being right. I think Dodgers in three was a text message I got from you at some point.
I may have exaggerated a little.
But even you, Captain Optimism, throughout these postseason, we were ready for this series to be done once the Dodgers were down 3-1 against the Braves. And this was the play that really turned that around.
Yeah, and like, so, you forget, right, that they're down 3-1 at that point. Yep. And like, so they obviously have to win three games, but I was so amped to just have the Will Smith versus Will Smith matchup. They already faced each other last year in the regular season, so it wasn't even that big of a deal. But like, God, it was playoffs, so I was excited for it. And then for it to end at a three-run homer, like that was so shocking and like so wonderful. Yeah, it was. That was an amazing moment. I agree with you.
Your turn.
Oh God. Okay. So. I'm trying to think. I'll probably go with. How about the third Mookie Betts catch in the NLCS?
Sure. We had to pick one, right?
Right.
One of these has to appear.
I think Game 7, because that's the one that was the home run, yep, that he robbed Freddie Freeman clearly over the wall. And God, it's like, was that the one where? Rick Monday said, does he have wings in his feet or something?
That sounds right.
Or it was a wonderful like turn of phrase that he had, but it's like you look back and that wall's really high and like he jumped so high, like, and he like timed it perfectly and everything about that was great. And so, but yeah, it was like, and the fact that it was the third day in a row, because like literally the post game in each of those games were like, man, that had to be like the play of the year for Mookie, right? And they're like, yeah. And then the next day, well, was this even better than yesterday? And it's like, it became like a joke by the third day. It was really funny.
I'm going to pick, I have my three, but I'm going to save the next one for last. Bueller getting out of the bases loaded, no outs.
Oh my God. Yes. That was great.
Because one, that's just a cool six moment, but also probably cemented like, cause he really credited, Barnes through for a lot of those hard situations of just being able to get him through, kind of cemented what it may, we'll never know for sure, but Barnes catching this bullpen game when all the other bullpen games either went really poorly or kind of shaky and they were so good, a factor at the very least, and possibly a very important factor.
Okay, so I might be going a little off book here.
Yep.
Only because I want to bring him up, and it was in Game 5.
Okay.
Early on against Tyler Glasnow to give the Dodgers a 3-0 lead. Jock Peterson, sure, who had a down year. He was not as good in the regular season as he has been. He hit 190, right? Like it was a rough season, and he was pretty good in the playoffs, right? Like he was not Early on, he wasn't used a ton, and but he did his usual like start against righties thing, and he ended up like he had a 559. He hit 382, right? He was 13 for 34 in the playoffs, but his home run in game five was pretty fun. He was off Tyler Glasnow, gave the Dodgers a 3-0 lead, I believe, and he was like caught on mic coming back, and he's like, "They don't want that smoke." And Jock is funny because like he's very terse, like in interviews, and you know, not as outwardly as he is like with his teammates and stuff. But like, it's funny when he like sort of lets it hang out a little bit, and that was a nice little moment for him.
All right, I get the last pick, and I'm going really off book. I think this is important. I'm going with the Brandon Phillips play. I'm going to include the double in scoring single in game five immediately after. Like that three plays together encapsulated what this whole postseason felt like, where just like so like the painful moment that we're all so used to, and then the immediate response back to where, oh, maybe this isn't going to be so bad. And that really, the again, extreme pain of just this whole, like, not only, we talked about this in 2017, the two most memorable games the Dodgers were loser in, this game four is going to be the most memorable game, maybe not in hindsight with the Dodgers winning, but it's the most upvoted play from the World Series and the baseball subreddit. It's the most talked about play. I had my sort of non-baseball fan friends and family talking to me about it. This was sort of what could have been the defining play had things not worked out, but the Dodgers responded and won the next two games.
They completely, like, I believe Corey Seager before game five said, we just, David Price tweeted something about flushing it away or whatever. And Corey Seager's like, yep, it happened. It's over. We move on. I forgot, just because I want to bring this up, even though I'm having an extra play. It's actually two. You can't I can't believe I forgot this earlier, but Cody Bellinger literally won the pennant with a home run in game seven. But before that, Kike Hernandez tied the game in the sixth inning in game seven. So those two like home runs were obviously huge. And by two Dodgers like stalwarts at this point.
Oh, all right. I think that's all I have in me.
Yeah. We'll get something going eventually. I'm not sure when our next record's going to be because I'm going to take some vacation time. Thank God. Dodgers are world champions. Thanks for listening, everybody. God, what a weird season, but what a satisfying ending, to be honest. Thanks for doing all these all year, Jacob. And we're going to keep going, obviously, but the season is over. And
We'll probably do like a bridge episode. I'm sure there's going to be updates on the COVID thing we'll talk about. There's going to be, you know, other just like, I'm sure we're going to get little Neil. Wow, I really can't talk. Neat little insights about the series that, you know, we're kind of behind the scenes that'll come through. We'll kind of do all of that. And then, I guess we start looking at 2021.
Oh man,
start talking about the offseason.
Free agency is like tomorrow,
and it's a big one for the Dodgers.
Yeah, a lot of these people we're talking about in this podcast. So thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the World Series. We'll talk to you soon.